All right, we'll get back to the NBA in just a little bit. We got some updates on some of the injuries that have happened and why are so many injuries happening in the first place. We'll talk about that. And then Kiki Iriafin, 6:30 tonight as we continue our Mystics interviews ahead of their debut on Friday for the 2025 season here on the Team 980. But we have hopefully found a more entertaining way to go through the schedule here, Anthony. We've now made a mock schedule. We have Sheehan makes it look much easier. Man, that guy. That 10-1 show. You guys should listen to that. We tried to do a schedule, and you realize you run into a bunch of stuff. And also, Anthony, I'm hoping that nobody's going to look at our silly mock schedule that we've done here and been like, hey, you idiots, so-and-such or such-and-such is playing overseas. For instance, we should double-check that we don't have the Vikings schedule mixed up because they've got two games already announced overseas. Okay, they're early in the season, so we're safe because we put them late in our little mock schedule. Anybody else that we need to be aware of? Like when Eagles 2025 schedule. They've got a million games already announced.
We should have looked at all the international games.
Well, the Eagles already have four games announced for 2025. So we got to make sure that we didn't... Like we put them week 16, and we put them... week 8. What's the date for week 8? The date for week 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, is the 26th of October. We're good, because the Eagles have games on September 4th, November 10th, November 28th, and December 20th. So, like, hopefully we haven't messed this up. Hopefully.
I think we're looking good.
Okay. So, week 1, we're guessing the Bears...
And we're gonna, Burrs.
All right, Sunday Night Football for that. Caleb Jaden, year two. Rematch of the Hail Jaden.
Yep.
Okay.
Hold on. We do have our already one Sunday Night Football game.
Yeah. We know that the Saturday game at week 16, for real.
Okay.
I've got two Sunday Night Football games, one Thursday Nighter, and then one Monday nighter, plus the Saturday Fox doubleheader, and I put some 4 p.m.ers in here too.
We getting some TV time now.
Yeah. But there's only a hard limit on the amount of primetime games. The 4 o'clock games don't count. So, Bears, Sunday Night Football, week one. At Dallas, that'll be a 4 p.m. kick, week two. Week three, home against the Seahawks, that's just regular game. Week four, Thursday Night Football at Atlanta.
I like it.
Week five, at the Chargers. Get the double travel, but Atlanta's not that bad of a flight. That kind of sucks. Week six, Giants. That'll be a 1 o'clock kick at home. And then, whew, buddy. Week seven, at Kansas City, Sunday Night Football.
Yes, sir.
Week eight, at Philadelphia, 4 o'clock kick.
We got a lot of away games to start the season.
Yeah, they can't put all of the 4 o'clock games or all the Philly games in primetime. Although it does feel a little silly that we have, you know, one's one of the Saturday games. But I'm just going for it. Maybe that, like, CBS is like, yo, that's going to be our game of the week. And it's a CBS 4 o'clock game. Week nine, Raiders at home. Week 10, bye. Week 11, we know we're going to get this one right. At Miami and Madrid. Week 12, come back home, get an extra day of rest, Monday Night Football against Denver.
Okay. Hey, look, I like what we cooking, man.
Flipped that one around from our disastrous attempt to create a schedule on the fly. Week 13, at Minnesota. Go back-to-back NFC North, Detroit, 4 p.m. in week 14. That's like your 4 p.m. game of the week.
Yep.
Also, there's a great chance, obviously, that week 13 game at Minnesota could get flexed. But we're gonna say that those two games are currently 1 and 4 o'clock kicks. Week 15 at the Giants. Week 16, Philly, Saturday. Week 17, Green Bay on Christmas. Week 18, Dallas. And obviously, that's a time TBD.
Probably going to be a night game.
Well, week 18, it's dependent on what happens in the schedule.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's competition adjacent. That's Craig and Anthony's haphazard mock schedule that we hope doesn't have any clear and obvious errors already made in it.
Probably.
Let's see. That cuts us with 1, 2, 3, 4 plus Saturday plus Christmas. Sheehan's got it on his mock schedule. Sunday, Monday, Thursday, Sunday, Sunday. He's got a full 6. So we could pop 2 more of these games into primetime. And it does definitely feel like that Detroit game, week 14.
Yeah, the Lions for sure.
That could be, I'm going to put / Sunday Night Football. And then the other one that I would watch out for, like week 5 at the Chargers, that one I think could be a prime time. Obviously, week 8 against Philly, that could be Sunday or Monday night. Maybe that's a Monday Night Football game. I think that's a solid guess. It's probably not right. The stakes are very low, but we did it. We made a mock schedule, Anthony.
I just can't believe we're getting this much love. One season, Craig. It took us a quarterback, a new head coach.
Yeah.
New ownership.
Well, and then you got a second place schedule. Like, you're going to play good teams. One, you're playing the NFC North and the AFC West, which might be 2 of the deepest divisions in football. So you have quality opponents in Kansas City, in LA, et cetera. And then obviously the NFC North sent 3 teams to the playoffs last year. Plus, your at-large teams are second-place teams. So, makes sense. Makes sense that they got some good ones.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah, for sure. All right, when we get back, why is the NBA having so many injuries? And does it actually prove that the league is not soft, like so many former players say? Plus, we will talk to Kiki Iriafin coming up at 6:30. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports, presented by Wawa Chicken. How you want it? Wawa with customizable crispy or roasted chicken sandwiches. It's Oppen Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. We talked through the entire first hour about the NBA draft lottery and how it was disappointing if you're a Wizards fan, and how it's broken fundamentally if you are an NBA fan, not just because, or for a million reasons. I mean, it takes a while to talk through them all. So rather than do that all again right now, I'll just simply say, you know, hey, check it out on the podcast or by rewinding in the Free Odyssey app. But I want to talk about another NBA problem, Anthony, and that is this season is way too damn long. And it is causing catastrophic problems for the league superstars. And I think it is, it's funny, but it's also like, I'm going to sound like a dork here and I don't care. The NBA has a reputation in 2025, and it has for 10 years now, of being soft, right? Comedically speaking, a very funny reel the other day that was these two guys depicting NBA defense throughout the generations. And like in the 80s, it was like good, solid defense. In the 90s, they were having a fist fight. In the 2000s, it was like good, solid defense. And then 2010s, it got worse. And then by 2025, it's like, ole! Oh, swipe at the ball as the guy does a fancy reverse layup. Like, and there's kernels of truth in all of that, in the intensity of the game and, you know, what we consider hard versus soft, right? Yes. You could do what we now consider a flagrant foul in the 1980s and 90s. And there were fights. And in that way, it was a very different game that you couldn't go to the rim necessarily in the same way. But it was also a select group of people. And, you know, they figured out how to score like 140 points in games in the 1980s without using the 3-point line. So, like, let's not pretend like there wasn't dudes attacking the rack unencumbered. But the league now, physically speaking, outside of the acute moments where dudes don't get decked like they did in the 90s, is so much more physically demanding than it used to be that I think the NBA has to look at it and go, oh God, this is probably why so many of our stars, the guys who take on the biggest burden and the biggest load, are getting hurt. And Anthony, I remember it was probably about a month and a half ago or something like that, I taught you about illegal defense, a thing you didn't really know existed in the 90s and before they changed the rule. I think it was in 2004.
Yeah.
And you were like, wait, what? And so the way defense used to work in the league is you had to play strict man-to-man. And what we consider now like good help defense was literally illegal. You either had to be on your man or you had to be dedicated to a double team. You couldn't float in and out of the lane. It wasn't defensive 3 seconds. They literally called it illegal defense. And the game thus, and also the way offenses worked back then schematically, was much more stagnant. Even the run and gun teams of the 1980s, a la the Showtime Lakers. Like, yes, they got out on the fast break and ran, but go watch their half-court offense. It was dump the ball to Kareem. Everyone else stands around. Kareem goes one-on-one, hits a skyhook, and scores 38,000 points. Right? It's the intensity of the running, the intensity of the cutting, the constant motion, the mental demand of the game now, because there is so many decisions that are made versus dribble, 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 toss ball to post player, maybe one guy cuts. It's a different sport. And yet, with all of that, they still play 82 games. And I think what that is why like load management has become a thing. And like, here's the thing. The science, it doesn't behoove teams to sit players. This is always my thing with like load management. Oh, they're soft. It's like, is it soft or are they trying to preserve their guys? Because like, no team is better by sitting their superstar. Nobody wants to have to do it for competitive reasons. They do it. It's because if we don't sit this guy tonight, we might lose him for the rest of the season. And so by the end, you still have guys that get hurt, that still have soft tissue injuries or tendons or ligaments or whatever those kinds of issues are, because the accumulated load of strain on their bodies is so high. You combine that with some other, like the change in the game rules. You can only have so many back-to-backs and what that's done to practice schedules. And there, I don't actually think the schedule has become like has been helpful to players where they've tried to do some things and there's been some unintended consequences. But you combine that with the undeniable fact that the game is just much more physically demanding now and the fact that they're not then lessening the load in total volume. And I think the easy solution to me, Anthony, is let's eliminate all back-to-backs. Let's try to get guys practicing again where you can have a more controlled environment. And the way to do that is not by extending the season. It's by shortening it. It's not to say like, okay, let's take more time. It's like, no, let's shorten the season. That way, if we go down to 66 games, and there's a reason for that number, it has to do with like the amount of home and away and all those kinds of things. 66 is a number that people like say is the right number, the people that have studied this. Then if your superstars are playing 64 of 66, great. We get a better product. You make up the financial difference by having more games on national TV, which is where all the money is. You could also, by the way, as a byproduct, this is just a nice little thing, the WNBA probably needs some room to expand. That would buy you a little bit of time to expand the W, and considering they're ultimately under the same umbrella, like you can make some more money that way. And it's better for the players. It's better for the sport. Yes, there's complications because now all of a sudden, like, is anyone ever going to catch LeBron James' scoring record? Probably not. Not if you chop off, you know, whatever number of games that is, 14, 16 games a year. Probably not. But like, if that means that whoever the guy that would gets to play an 18-year career instead of a 14, or that 15-year career that was going to be 15, that he plays 15 healthy seasons versus 10 healthy seasons, one, maybe he does get the record. Two, that's better for the sport. And I think that is where we are. And a guy like Jason Tatum, who's been an absolute model of consistency, he's barely missed any time ever in his career. But the last couple of years, he made the finals in 2022, made the finals in 2024. Here we are in 2025. Bang. Done. Achilles. Like, it's how many more dudes do we want hurt? And how many NBA champions do we want to just be the team that survived the injuries by the end as opposed to truly the best team over the course of a season?
No, I think that's a valid point. And you can even take a look at Kawhi Leonard. This year, they sort of kind of like low managed him. Like, he didn't play a lot of back-to-backs, and he eventually was able to make it to the end of the season because, again, Kawhi's thing was he would play all these games, and towards the end of the season, his body would start to break down, and he would always miss the playoffs. So I think this year, the fact that, you know, they did a good job of just managing his workload, it allowed us to be able to see Kawhi Leonard in the playoffs, which we all wanted to see. And guess what? He ultimately ended up playing well. You look at a team like the Cavs, who are, for most of the season, they've been, you know, pretty healthy. And then it wasn't until as of late, you know, the Darius Garland of the world, the Evan Mobleys, the DeAndre Hunters, they start, you know, breaking down because, again, like, yes, they are young guys, but at the same token, it is a lot of wear and tear on the body. And playing 82 games and then also expecting to elevate your level of play when it gets to the playoffs, that can be a little taxing on the body. So
it's too much. It's just flat too much to expect the human body to handle. And I don't know how much more evidence we need. And I realize that everyone's going to be really reluctant to reduce games because, like, oh my God, the money. But you got to be willing to invest in your product. And your product in this case is your people. And I just think that's the better play for the NBA moving forward. All right, speaking of the W, the Mystics kick off their season on Friday, and we're hitting you with one interview every single day leading into their season opener. Today, the fourth overall pick in the WNBA draft, Kiki Iriafin, with us here on The Hoffman Show next. Mystics Media Day continuing on the Team 980. Craig Hoffman with Kiki Iriafin, fourth overall pick in the 2025 WNBA Draft. Kiki, great to see you. I feel like, you know, you do the off-camera thing, and then you say the same stuff on camera, and like, I've said nice to meet you three times. She's lovely. It's great to meet her. We don't need to do that again.
She's lovely as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So, unbeknownst to you, I talked to Lindsay Gottlieb a couple weeks ago.
Oh, gosh.
Don't worry. She had amazing things to say. Okay. And the thing that struck me about what I talked about with Lindsay that also struck me about you at the press conference, and really, frankly, even on draft night, was you are someone who has both style and substance. And that, like, is in your game. And obviously, on the draft night, you have this beautiful dress, but it's also paying homage to your heritage. And I brought that up to Coach, and she was like, that is who she is. So I'm curious for you, like, living that experience, living that life, yeah. Like, how much fun do you have leaning into, you know, sometimes just being light and fun, sometimes, you know, having those deeper conversations and the different dynamics that you get to experience with people? Good softball, easy question to start. Not,
right.
Not deep at all.
Just super easy. Oh, no, I love it. I kind of talk with my teammates, and we joke that I have a bunch of different personas. Like, when I'm on the court, I can be like stone cold, but then I can also be very like joyous, but then off the court I'm super bubbly, like I have such a loving personality. But I kind of love kind of mixing and matching depending on what the situation is. I can be very lighthearted and fun, but I could also be like, you know, very intentional about what I'm talking about. But I think it's just like all the places I've been. I went to Stanford, I went to a great high school, I went to USC, so a bunch of different areas that have helped shape me into this kind of shapeshifter, I guess.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's just something that I've kind of always been. I've always been someone that can kind of go with the flow of whatever situation I'm in.
Yeah, you could say shapeshifter. You also just say you have layers. It's you're dynamic.
I like
that like you have a like you hear that phrase, right? Like a dynamic personality. But I think the thing that also strikes me is the intentionality. And like it's a little moment, but at the press conference, like people start asking questions, there's this rhyme or rhythm of like we've all been through this a million times before, and you just like stop down and you're like, no, hi, hello, great to meet everybody. And I'm curious where that comes from. Like, is that your parents? Is that the community that raised you? Is that something that you kind of picked up at Stanford? Like, where does that very human touch come from?
I would say definitely my parents, kind of starting with them, like having manners, being respectful to everybody around you. Like, you're never bigger than anybody, so I don't see myself as greater than whoever's around me or whoever's interviewing me or doing something for me. Like, I see us as equals. And I think also at my different institutions, Stanford, USC, like, same thing. When we left an arena, we cleaned up after ourselves. We said thank you to whoever helped us do something. So kind of just being respectful. Like, we're all humans at the end of the day. But I would say, like, with my family definitely started that with me.
Stanford was obviously an incredible experience for you, yeah. And then you make the shift to USC, and I talked to Lindsay about this obviously as well, but I want to hear your side of it. Like, why enter the portal,
mm-hmm.
and then why USC, and what did you hope to get out of that experience, and then ultimately did you get what you wanted out of it?
Yeah, it was a tough decision to leave Stanford, somewhere that I had kind of grown up into the person and player that I am today, and just leaving all my friends. I had a great thing going, so it was really hard to leave that, but I really had to reflect on what do I want in the next year. I wanted to win a national championship. I wanted to be challenged. I wanted to prepare myself for the WNBA, and I felt like going to USC would help me do that. It was also close to home, which was something that was important to me in my last season, to have all the people that helped me get there to be able to see me consistently. But I think, you know, USC really challenged challenged me offensively, defensively, playing with other great superstars and great guards. That's what it's going to be like in the league, and figuring out how can I make an impact maybe if it's not all about me. So I think, you know, I grew in a lot of aspects of my game. I grew mentally, I grew as a leader, and I think all those things have already been translating in my 1 week that I've been with the Mystics, but it will continue to translate as I, you know, rookie year is going to be hard. So
yeah.
Going through all of that, I feel very confident because I've gone through stuff in the past.
I was also surprised, but not, to learn that you graduated in Stanford 3 years too, which I'm only surprised because then it's like, how does someone do that? I couldn't graduate from Stanford if given all the time in the world, but that's okay. So you got all that done at Stanford, and then you go to USC, and I'd imagine also like there's a learning about learning that mm-hmm. happens because you have to learn a new system. What did you learn about how you learn, how you integrate new information as a basketball player, and then how does that help you as you get started in your WNBA career?
Yeah, I learned that I pick up things pretty fast, especially if it's visual. If you show me something visually, I'll get it immediately. Sometimes the verbal cues, it's like, wait, what does that mean? But I'm a quick learner, and I'm someone that is not afraid to ask questions. So I'll ask my coach, like, what do you mean by this? What is this supposed to look like? I'd ask the returners, what does this look like? And I feel like the same thing here. You know, our coaches want us, as a rookie, you want to know it quickly, you want to know it fast. One take is kind of what they talk to us about. So something that I feel like USC has helped me, you know, having to go through a whole new system in 1 year and then doing the same thing now. So I see a lot of parallels in those two situations.
Stanford, there's, you know, there's a lot of eyes, a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Cam winds up going number two out of that. But I'd assume being in the JuJu orbit was a whole different experience as well. What was that like to kind of be in that pressure cooker, knowing all the eyes are on, the gyms are full, there's celebrities sitting in front row, the whole deal?
That's the most exciting part. Like, you love playing out in a sold-out arena, sold-out crowd. You don't know which celebrity's going to pop up any single night. But I wouldn't say there was pressure from that. I think that's what we like strive for. Like, we want that, and that just shows where the women's game has grown and gone into. But I think for me, it's just like knowing that there's a bunch of eyes on you every single day, and that's your new normal.
And then the other thing too is the travel schedule had to be crazy last year because the Big Ten, boy, are they putting the big in it now. But that's also like, this league is a nationwide league, and yeah. You might be here on a Tuesday and playing in Seattle on a Friday. So, you know, doing the cross country thing, like, it is what it is. So did you learn about like how to prepare your body, all those kinds of things? And you know, was there like an experimentation phase almost with that? Or did you kind of have a good plan, you think, going in that helped you handle that?
I think because I had already done most of my schooling, like, I don't know how I would have done it.
And in the interview, you guys don't know yet, but Kiki said that I'm her favorite.
Yes, that's my fave.
She's a pretty good pick.
Anyway, no, I love Aaliyah, but I'm kind of salty because her Huskies beat me and ended my college career. So
yeah,
it's a little bit of bad blood, but not really.
Well, especially because she's out here claiming that's her championship too.
Exactly,
so
but
I could see that.
I digress.
You got the same jersey on now, so we're gonna have to eventually.
Love.
Maybe not. Like, I think you got to the rest of training camp.
Yes.
By the end of training camp, we're gonna have to put that to the side.
Yes.
But like, I think you're it's salties, and this is allowed for the moment.
Yes, exactly.
What were we talking about? Oh, your schooling was done. You completed.
Okay, yes. Okay.
And then travel.
So I was
and
done
the whole
with
deal.
My undergrad, so I didn't feel like the travel was as tough because I wasn't doing a lot of homework on the road. But I think the biggest thing I learned was recovery is super important. Being on the road, being in the plane for a lot of time, so being hydrated, recovery, and my school provided a lot of that. So definitely, I'll keep that up here.
Also. Student athlete at some schools is, let's just say, skewed a little bit towards the athlete side. Stanford is not one of those schools.
At all.
What did you learn about time management as an 18, 19, and 20-year-old that you think will help you as a pro?
Yeah, it's important. Time management is important. And I think, you know, my story just shows, like, if you put your mind to something, you can do it. It won't be easy, but, like, you can definitely do it. So I wouldn't say, like, you should sacrifice one. Like, if you love, you know, medicine, you should be able to do that and play basketball. So for me, it was just about putting my head down and understand that I really want this engineering degree. So whatever it takes to do it, but I also really want to be the best of the best on the court. So I kind of just, you know, sacrificed maybe not going out to every single party, maybe sleeping a little bit less, but I wanted it really badly.
You and Georgia went to dinner the night before the draft. I asked her about this as well.
I was gonna say, how do you know that?
Well, one, you guys said it at the press conference.
Okay.
And two, then I asked her about it because you guys said it at the press conference. But what was that like for you? She said you guys had the mutual friend. I think Agnes
was
a mutual friend.
Agnes.
I remembered. So how did you guys get connected? What did you guys talk about that night? And then I want your version of kind of that moment you see each other backstage mm-hmm. after her name has been called. and you guys realize, like, oh, wow, we're really going to be teammates.
Yeah. So George and I have always kind of known of each other, like, as you do in the basketball space. And then this past summer, we both got invited to the Nike camp. So we got to know each other, and we knew we had the mutual friend, so we connected a little bit. And then during draft, after having that Nike experience, we, like, connected a lot more. It was like we've been friends for years. And then the night before draft, we were like, let's just go get dinner. And we just kind of talked about, what are we excited for? Where do we want to go? What kind of all the emotions that we're feeling around draft. And then after I got picked, I like went back. I was doing a bunch of media. And they were like, what, the sixth pick? And I said, what? I was like, guys, who? Like, and they said, Georgia. I said, no way. I literally grabbed my producer and I was like, Georgia? Like, I love Georgia. We literally just hung out. We literally made a TikTok this morning. And for us to be teammates, I was just super excited, super special. And she's a great person, number one, has great energy and really cares about other people. And she's a great guard on the floor. And, like, she's always finding her big. So I'm excited to be her teammate and to play with her. But, yeah, I think, you know, we were meant to be teammates, truly, just looking back on all of our experiences together.
Yeah, and I know Georgia and Sony have a great relationship going back a long time, too, and there's a lot of mutual respect there, so a heck of a trio that we get here in D.C. All right, last two questions. I'm going to have to save all the other ones I got for an interview later in the season. But two final questions that I'm asking everybody today.
Okay.
What's the story behind your jersey number?
Ooh, my jersey number in high school, my coach allowed us to pick a number, and then I don't remember what number I picked, but she said, you can't have that number. And I said, why? She's like, because you're going to wear 44. So it was actually assigned to me. And I was like, why? And she was like, well, it was my number, and I want you to take it far. So wear 44.
So she,
I see. Yeah,
coach.
I mean, she has great vision.
Shout her out.
Coach Melissa Hurley-He, and she's someone that's still in my life and someone that I love dearly, always texts me. But yeah, and I can't imagine being any number other than 44.
I love it. I love it. All right. And then last but not least, this has been the one that I've stumped people with all day.
Uh-oh.
If I could just pull a piece of paper out and be like, all right, Kiki, I got a brand deal for you that you're not currently working with right now.
Okay.
Who's the brand that you want to see on that piece of paper?
This is supposed to be a hard question?
Oh, some people are like, I got a list. I got to pick one. You got someone. No.
Chanel, reach me. My Instagram is @KikiEriefn. Let's work together. Chanel.
Easy enough. Easy for Kiki. Kiki, this was so much fun. Thank you. We'll talk to you later in the season.
Thank you.
Anthony, you're so proud of yourself. And I get it. It's a good job by you.
Thank you, sir.
My wife is here, and so Anthony decided to play our first dance song from our wedding. Because Anthony's got a good file.
I think every time I see Rachel Lane, I will play this song.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Unless she has another preference.
No. Also, she can't hear you right now. She doesn't have headphones on.
Hey, Rachel, do you have another Beyonce preference?
Something from the Renaissance album.
Okay, say no more.
Yeah. She's not here very often, but, you know, just she happens to be here today and just walked in. So, you know, Anthony gave her a proper introduction. Real things, real people said in their real microphones coming up next. Tomorrow on the show, we were going to talk about... what's it called? We're going to talk about Regina Jackson, Jayden Daniels' mother, her interview with Ryan Clark on his podcast, the Pivot Podcast. We obviously scratched that for today because of the NBA draft lottery going so sideways in so many ways. So we'll probably actually get to some of that on Thursday because I do want to talk about it because it is interesting. But tomorrow, Anthony, it's schedule release day.
Yes, sir.
So pretty excited about that. Anthony and I did one of the worst radio segments we've ever done in the history of our show at 5:45, trying to put together a schedule. But I think we salvaged it at 6. I think the schedule we wound up with and the conversation we had, that was good if people wanted to check that out. Skip 5:45. If you're a podcast listener and you like catch the end of the show live and then you go back and listen to the rest of it, 4 o'clock hour, banger. Chase Hughes, awesome. 5:30 segment? What do we do at 5:30? Oh, we talked about Madrid. That was a really funny segment. We got real sideways. Anthony forgot what the word siesta meant. It was a whole thing. You can skip 5:45. You just fast forward to the end, mark that as played, and keep on going about your life. Just friendly advice from me to you.
Yeah, we don't need that.
That wasn't our best work.
Nah.
I'll take responsibility on that one. Kind of called an audible on the fly and couldn't execute the play. Ran us into a bad look, so to speak. Any other housekeeping, Anthony, from the show today that we would like to alert people to?
Who's our Mystics player for tomorrow?
That's a great question, Anthony. Tomorrow on the show, people will hear one of my favorite conversations from Media Day. I really enjoy Kiki. Sonia Citrone's a very different conversation. Very, very thoughtful, very introspective, very self-aware. And I really enjoy Sony. So Sonia Citron tomorrow. And then on Thursday, you'll hear from Brittany Sykes. And then Friday, Sydney Johnson. Also, another fun thing that I've got tabbed for later this week, Anthony. Have you ever seen the Subway Takes series on Instagram or YouTube?
I haven't seen them, but you've been sending them to me. So I've slowly but steadily added them all.
Actually, I think there's one in Real Things today.
One today.
We'll play the one from Jose Andres of what's a chef or what yesterday? Is cooking. Yeah. I'm going to pull that one. So basically, it's this guy who takes the subway in New York and he has famous people with him and they record they record conversations. And he had Asia Wilson on, and Asia did a whole bit about how reporters should have had to play the sport. And I think it's actually a fun conversation. So Thursday, we'll try to have it on the show. Right now, though, now that I've set ourselves up for plenty of Real Things Real People Said in Real Microphones, it's time for Real Things Real People Said in Real Microphones.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
All right, since I just mentioned it, let's go back all the way to our folder yesterday, Anthony. I can pull that up over here. And Jose Andres, the chef, was on Subway Takes and tried to convince the host of the show that everybody can cook. This is how that went.
So what's your take?
Everybody can cook.
100% disagree. I can't cook. No. You're wrong.
Let me make my point.
How am I making your point? You can't. I can't cook.
You can cook.
No, I can't.
You can. Do you use a microwave?
Do I use a microwave? No, I don't own a microwave.
Do you open a can?
I've opened a can. I've been known to open a can.
Opening a can is cooking. Do you bite into the apple?
Yes, that's eating.
No, that's cooking. So cooking is anything that allows you to eat. Letting a strawberry ripe on the plant, in a way, that's cooking.
That's letting God cook.
Okay, but somebody's cooking.
Yeah, he's cooking. Let him cook.
Everybody can cook. When you forget something in your fridge that starts developing green things, that's cooking too.
No, that's not cooking. No, that's mold.
Correct, but you've been cooking in the process.
I will say, to this point, I do not think Jose Andres is winning the argument, Anthony.
No, he's not.
Let's see if he can recover.
No, you haven't been cooking.
You cannot eat it anymore, but that's cooking. Cooking is when you are able to feed somebody. Okay. Doesn't have to be heating
bowl. Okay. I still disagree.
Okay, can you boil water?
Yes, I can boil water.
That's cooking.
No, that is not
cooking. It is cooking because boiling water is very simple principle.
Is there a difference between a chef and the person who boils water? Are you a chef?
No, I'm a cook.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm an expert on cooking.
What's the difference between a chef and a cook?
A chef knows what to do in a kitchen.
And a cook is just boiling water?
It's clueless.
Okay.
He only cooks. A chef directs others to cook.
Oh, a chef is a director.
A director.
Ah.
Maybe he doesn't know how to play the flute, but he can direct the many musicians. That's the difference between a chef and a cook.
I love the authenticity of in the background. This is real because...
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah. It's real New York subway.
Oh, what?
Beans.
Wait, why do you have beans in your pocket?
He does pull out a can of beans.
Will come in to see you. Think I have a fork. Oh, yeah.
You have a fork on you?
Because I always have.
Always keep that thang on you.
I love this.
Can I have a bite?
Open the bottle.
Oh, my God.
If you open it, you cook it. You're proving me right.
Add a little hot sauce.
I just cooked.
Yeah.
I just cooked.
Holy. Yeah. You like it spicy?
I like it spicy.
Clear up the closing doors, please.
Mmm, so good.
In the subway, I prove you that I'm right.
You know what? I agree with you. You just cooked. I just cooked. I ate beans on the train. Out of a can.
Are we supposed to eat in the train?
I think he got there by the end, Anthony. He opened a can of beans and put some hot sauce in it. That's cooking.
I guess he was cooking then.
Not all food has to be hot. There's a lot of skill in preparing cold foods.
Oh.
That's cooking. Letting food mold in the refrigerator, not cooking.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I guess technically that's cooking. It's just bad cooking.
I'm just not eating that.
No. Where do you go on the scale from microwave to boiling water to cooking?
I do it all.
You do it? Anthony, what's the dish? What's your go-to dish? What's the thing that, you're cooking for your family, cooking for a lady, cooking for your friends.
Salmon, rice, broccoli. My favorite meal prep. Salmon is my favorite food, I think.
How do you season or flavor your salmon?
So I start off marinating. Hey, you put me on the spot.
You said it's your go-to. This shouldn't have been that hard.
I add some olive oil. I go garlic powder, salt, pepper.
Okay.
I have this salmon, cedar plank salmon seasoning.
Oh, okay.
I sprinkle that on there. I put it in the oven, and then boom.
That's our show. We'll see you tomorrow for NFL schedule release.